Welcome back to an all-new episode of Pro Wrestling Off Topic with Joshua Yeager and Zach Huggenbusher.
Yeah. Ooh. And I can't believe Coco Beware took the very first Undertaker's tombstone, and he almost broke his neck. That's right, we're back with episode 163 of
WWE
DWOT.
Hall of Famer
Coco Beware was the first tombstone. That's right. Yeah. And Taker almost broke his neck.
You know who was the first Stone Cold Stunner?
Hold on. Was it Savio Vega?
You are correct, sir. It was Savio Vega.
Two for two. Look at us. What a way to start the new month. It's May 2024. We have had WrestleManias in the back review mirror. We've had what was AEW's pay-per-view? Revolution was a while ago. And then it was Dynasty is in the rear view.
Yep.
With potentially one of the greatest matches that we've ever seen in modern day PPV.
The brand new AEW World Champion Swerve Strickland, just as I was hoping would take place. Absolutely.
The brand new IWGP World Champion, Jonathan L. Moxley.
That was a bit of a shock, but at the same time, if you think about it, they don't have a lot else to go through. They don't have a lot of other guys to go to the well for right now in that company. They're pretty depleted when it comes to main event talent. So I think the idea of using Naito versus somebody else, maybe at a larger show like a Wrestle Kingdom down the line, we can use that to push that guy at that time. Let's put Moxley over now. He's a main event hand all over the world. He can carry this belt through the summer while we get through our G1. So does this pencil Moxley in? This is where we can start, I guess. Does this pencil Moxley in for the G1 then? Is this going to be Moxley's second full G1? Because usually, right, the champion wrestles the G1.
I guess if I were AEW, and you're thinking about this now, Moxley, in my opinion, for the remainder of the next 5 years plus and into his career, is a main event guy, right? We know that. No matter where he is, he's going to be a main event guy.
Yeah, he's an icon of the industry at this stage.
If in 2024, AEW has no plans to put him in the main event scene, why not let him? Because really, they gotta, in my opinion, and NJPW and AEW need to get somewhere back on the good side of each other. Not to say that they're ever been at odds, but AEW is virtually on their own responsible for depleting NJPW's main event scene on their own. Because Jay White would be the guy, Okada would be the guy, obviously the GOAT. Will Ospreay could be the guy. They've taken all of them. That's their top three. You can't put the belt back on Tanahashi because he's just too old and no one else is ready. I mean, what could you do? Could you do the Sonata again? That was the lamest, most boring world main event scene of NJPW's history. I mean, for ages. And they really wanted to have that old school style of a wrestler who's just a good hand, a good worker, you know, dominant, wins matches, and that's great, and doesn't do great on promos. And that's what they did, and that's what they had, and guess what? It didn't really work out so great for them. So I love Naito. As much as I love Naito, he's almost just as old as Tanahashi. So really, like, they have to establish some new stars, and I think you can build something with Moxley for the rest of this year. I would have him go all the way to Wrestle Kingdom as champion and have him drop the belt there to someone. Potentially, who knows? I mean, I don't know where I would go with that. Maybe somebody from the Bullet Club. Maybe you've got that the new kid. What's his the Shillelagh's boy's son? What's his
David
name?
David Finlay. Let's not talk. Maybe, I don't know. He's a little bit of a geek. Like he's kind of king of the geeks right now. Well, I mean, if you think about it, he won that brand new prestigious belt and then lost it to Nick Nemeth right away, like within a month.
True.
I'm like, what is going on? I thought he beat Ospreay and Moxley for this new belt. It was supposed to be the new equivalent of the IC/US title or whatever.
Yeah.
And instead, it's a complete afterthought. I don't even think about it anymore. Like, yeah, maybe that's a statement against Nick Nemeth in some way. I don't know. But I think it's more to the sense that you showed me that to you guys, this is just a toy. Like, this is just a thing that we can put on. Oh, yeah, let's just give it to Nick Nemeth because he's famous or whatever. Yeah, what about your freaking Bullet Club leader? I mean, unless Bullet Club isn't supposed to be taken seriously anymore, which I'm fine with. If you want to kill Bullet Club, I've been for killing Bullet Club
the time,
for a long time. Like, figure something else out if Bullet Club isn't working out anymore. If it's not, if it's a shadow of what it once was, I'm all for rotating it out for a different faction, figuring something else out. But I'll tell you this. It's very reminiscent of, what was it? Like a sports team, you know, the Oakland Athletics. There we go.
Okay.
Well, maybe not even then, because they like straight up don't even try. But okay, like the Green Bay Packers for the last like 30 years. They have a superstar, super piece in the middle that keeps, it's the glue that keeps everything together. And that allows the team to be very, very loafish, very cheap, very lazy on other aspects of talent management, right? Of talent rotation.
That is true.
Of talent development. Yes. You know, it's all of those things. You know, not to accuse my favorite team, because they are my favorite team, right? Don't get me wrong. I love the Green Bay Packers. Sure. Blue, green, and gold. I always have, always will. I watched every game last season, even though I thought Jordan Love was going to win maybe 3 games at the most, and he wound up winning 9 and then a 10th, and that 10th was a really good one. So, hey. Mm-hmm. We'll take him in the next year. That's what I say. But
that's
because he proved it. That's because he proved it out there. Yeah, I was critical. But the point is, I'm allowed to be critical. They're my team, okay? They're my team. I'm allowed to be critical.
They're your team. You're allowed. Yep.
But
we'll allow it.
All I'm trying to say is that kind of situation is what's been going on in New Japan for the last, like, well, at least since the pandemic.
Two years,
if not just a year or two before. Like, we're talking like 4 or 5 years now this has been brewing, because the people that bought New Japan, the Bushiroad Company, they put the wrong people in charge of it. It was evident from, I mean, when Okada left, you know, he's crying in the ring and all of this, because I don't think he ever truly, truly wanted to go. But he looked at this, and he looked at the company, and he looked at what had happened with it to that point, and he went, there's nobody for me to work here. You didn't do a good enough job of making everybody to the point where I have opponents now. Like, instead, they're all just geeks. They're all just mid-card guys. And now I have to go to America because I can't languish away here, which I think any of us who are at, you know, who were following it in any fashion would also agree that, you know, Okada coming to America at some point became an inevitability. And
true.
I don't think it always was. I don't think that the AJ Styles, Bullet Club, Shinsuke Nakamura exodus in 2016, that is the beginning of all of this. Obviously, the beginning of NJPW beginning to become essentially a breeding ground for raising profile of talent to bring them to the States. Like, that's happened several times now with both WWE and, you know, AEW. And I think obviously you see the writing on the wall, and there's two ways to react to it. You can either come back, you know, knowing that your people are going to get essentially poached. I mean, that's why they leaned so hard, I think, on their Japanese born talent, because it's, you know, more likely that you're going to find a Hiroshi Tanahashi who has no intention of ever wrestling anywhere else, probably.
Right?
Like, that sort of thing where you can bank on these people and keep them in-house, and you don't have to necessarily worry about WWE being super interested in them, or even if they are, maybe like Tama Tonga, for example, they just push him away for years because they're like, no, I got people to work over here. I'm making good money. My friends are here. My family's here. I'm here. Like, that was the case for a lot of people with NJPW. And then over the last, especially you had mentioned maybe 2 years or so.
2 years,
it's been a lot worse for them in that regard. And as far as maintaining, you know, free agents, as far as keeping them, there really is, it's been an outdoor pretty much the entire way. So that culminated in losing Okada. Now the entire company takes a hit as a result. I thought Wrestle Kingdom was still pretty good as a show. I thought setting up Naito as champion coming into the year was a good idea because I figured he was going to work a whole bunch of young guys and then raise their profile. I guess either he can't do that, which he might not be able to do that, right? Let's be real. Either he can't do that physically right now and they got it on Moxley because he couldn't, or they think Moxley is the better person to raise the profile of these guys, which in America, to an American audience, maybe they're right. This may actually be President Tanahashi, you know?
Yeah.
This may actually be the time, the move, that gets them back to where they need to be.
Maybe. So when Naito won the World Championship, the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, it seemed like that was where his story ended, and there really wasn't anything that took place after that. I mean, he worked a few matches here and there, but really anything that I heard of out of NJPW over the last few months has been Matt Riddle coming in and then leaving, and then Nick Nemeth winning the mid-card title. And it's like, and Zack Sabre Jr., you know, there's a few things here and there. There's a lot of a good work that's happening out there. And of course, good matches like always, but really with such a huge mass exodus of superstars, you would think there would be someone that's been elevated to a certain point that's new.
And there's Bullet a couple, Club. You know, Sonata, you could argue Sonata has been pushed to a new level, but even he, like by the end of his title run, I'm just waiting for it to end. I'm waiting for the next guy that I care about more to get it.
Yep. Yeah. And if Naito didn't beat Sonata at Wrestle Kingdom, we'd probably have been like, well, what the fuck? Like, what are they going to do now? Like, this guy's gone through practically everyone and it's bored everyone to tears. That's the thing is I think they wanted Sonata to be the guy. I think they wanted Sonata to be the next Okada. And maybe that's where they need to start to work with Pro Wrestling Noah more. Because that one guy who Okada seemed to have an actual legit feud with.
Kaito?
I think he's an excellent talent. And it's weird to say that Pro Wrestling Noah might be in a better position for the future right now than NJPW. Unless, you know, they're kind of a development system for NJPW and then they can get those kind of guys. But I guess that's to find out for the future. But right now, I don't feel compelled to check out every week to see where NJPW is. I don't feel like it's gripping television right now. I know the wrestling's great. And if I ever want to just have a hankering for really great wrestling, I will tune in, of course. But yeah, it's been a weird situation for sure. But I don't know what to say.
I mean, they've already set things up for the future here with that first announced title defense for Moxley. He's going to defend it against Ren Narita, who is one of these new blood guys that has been introduced in the last year or two. So
is he the smiling one? The one who smiles? With the mouth guard, he smiles.
With the mouth guard. I don't know who you're thinking of with the mouth guard. Maybe it is Ren Narita then? Yeah, long hair. That's, I think, I don't know who's got a mouth guard, but there's Yoda Tsuji. He's got, like, big teeth. Like, he's got a big smile.
Yeah, that's so what I was
thinking
of.
I don't think he has a mouth guard. Well, maybe he does have a mouth guard. I don't know. But then you've got him. You've got, you've got Shota Umino that's been coming up. Ren Narita has been coming up. They were heating up Jack Perry down there for a little bit. Obviously, Jack now has his own... Yeah, that's done. He's graduated.
He's been called back up. Because that's about the only news out of the Bullet Club that we had heard this year that was even noteworthy is that Jack Perry showed up and he's wearing Bullet Club gear. And it's like, cool, they did some promos and he's calling himself the scapegoat. And, well, now he's back in AEW because they
He wasn't even in Bullet Club. That was with the House of Torture.
Oh, that's right. The House of Torture.
That was with
House
of Torture. So, yeah, Bullet Club isn't even cool enough to get the attention of their, like, the big main event, you know, foreign heel coming in. That's usually where they would slot them as Bullet Club, and they can't even do that with Jack Perry. So, that's kind of a missed opportunity, actually. You'd think that they could have sprung board that back into his AEW stuff pretty easily.
And then if he's going to join up with the Elite, then you could have connections there.
Yeah, exactly.
Elite Bullet Club, maybe working back together again. But, it feels like...
Whatever.
Yeah. Bullet Club feels like it definitely needs some kind of mix up, something to make them relevant again. Because if David Finlay's not going to be in the main event scene, I don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say. You can't keep holding guys like Zack Sabre Jr. down forever either.
I think no offense, and I'm not trying to cut here. You finish your thought.
Because I do think that he is going to be one of those free agents in the next year or two that are going to seek some sort of attention elsewhere, from AEW, from WWE, from wherever, that will probably get a contract offer or two, because he is that good of a talent, where he is that William Regal, he's that Bryan Danielson, he's that excellent worker who can also talk. I mean, that's a big thing that NJPW desperately needs, is to make connections with audiences outside of Japan. Not saying they desperately need that, but in order to, you know, be a genuine, actual alternative to WWE or AEW, yeah, you have to have someone that can speak to the world. And so, like, as much as I love watching Naito, you know, and having them translate his promos and stuff, and I know very little Japanese and I'm learning, but it's a slow burn. Japanese is a difficult language to learn, especially if you only know English. So, man, I don't know, the promos and the stylings and the after show promos that they do, you know, in the back with the cameras going off and stuff. I like that, but I genuinely like it better when you can understand what they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always going to be, I think, a bit of a cultural gap there, right? I always keep the promo on, you know, that closes the show after the main event, and then I listen to the announcers, you know, translate it as best as they can live.
Right.
And then it's like, yeah, I know I'm missing a little bit of something, but I'm also, you know, you're hearing the crowd reaction, you're seeing that they're,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
their performance, their intensity. I don't lose, I mean, to me, it's almost kind of, it was part of the hump to get, like, into the product, like when you had first introduced it to me now about a decade ago, it would have been that we had, yeah, that you had probably started opening the door of, hey, you know, this is on too, this is wrestling. And I'm like, it's not WWE, because I was a little brat, you know. But now,
11 years ago that we started this silly little show.
Yeah, now I'm learned, you know, now I'm a learned wrestling guru. And the wrestling guru is a big, big fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling. The wrestling guru is also a big, big fan of AEW, All Elite Wrestling. But I'll tell you what, Joshua, AEW's... They're in a super, super weird spot. This past Wednesday, I just, you know, I'm watching this show, and I'm watching these people that are in this crowd, and I think the last thing that this company needs right now is the appearance that even their own fans are like,
are bored,
sitting on their hands. Yeah. And that's what they did for many. Like, well, it was weird. Like, they would react. I don't know if Canadians are just like, and you know what? It could have just been politeness, maybe, of like wanting to just take in the action, which, hey, I do that too.
Maybe.
I'm not saying that I cheer and boo the entire time through a wrestling
match.
That's
true.
But if I'm watching a live show, you've been to shows with me, if I'm watching a show and the heel, like, you know, does something to rile up the crowd, I will participate in that.
Even though
I know that I'm literally only doing it because, you know, I'm basically obliging the performers, I also know that that's part of wrestling, is the crowd response, and the crowd can make a match. The crowd can take a super average match and make it like a really memorable good match.
Yep.
So I like to be part of that. I like the audience participation aspect of wrestling to a degree. I don't like the Mercedes Moné CEO thing. We can complain about
that
in a second.
Awful.
It's awful.
Oh, that is the worst.
It's awful. I don't like that. I don't like when it's built in. I don't like when they're like, you need to cheer this. But like, you know, if something organic starts, like a Shinsuke Nakamura, people doing his, you know, singing his song, that's organic. That's cool. I like that. I would participate in that, you know, if I was in that crowd. Like, all of this is to say, Adam Copeland is sitting there like, what are you guys doing? And they're just kind of looking back at him like, oh yeah, you're really good. And then like they would do like a big spot and everybody would go, oh. And then it would go back, and then go back to hearing a pin drop. And you're like, okay, so you are reacting, but you're not like, you're not reacting. Like, you're,
I don't
the
think
whole
anybody
place
likes,
is too quiet for too long.
I don't
long.
Think anybody likes Adam Copeland's angle right
well,
now.
Well, I know. It's the whole House of Black thing. I mean, right. Well, that is another case in point. You want to talk about like an encapsulation of my frustration, your frustration, the overall frustration with AEW that maybe is finally boiling over and coming to the surface, that I'm now coming to terms with that it's not necessarily, I mean, yes, existentially this threatens them for sure, but it's also not unfair to point out that when you market this match of it's a mystery, it's a mystery. It could be any of the three members of the House of Black in an unannounced or announced less than a week earlier TNT title defense on Dynamite, not in the main event of the show.
Yeah.
Who could it be? It's obviously Buddy Matthews.
Yeah.
It's obviously the least interesting member of the group that he could have wrestled. The one who's the biggest geek, the one who loses all his matches. It's obviously him. And what happened? Yeah. He lost the match. Adam Copeland won. Yay.
I can't believe, you know, as good. And the thing is it doesn't, this is a whole nother rant. Anyway, but I do think AEW is struggling right now because they just let Paige Van Zandt's contract expire.
Oh man.
He hasn't been on TV since 2021.
What an impact player. Yeah, exactly. It was clear that apparently Tony went, never mind on that one.
She was a character and she was a personality that I think would have been great. You know, they just, it's one of those things where if it's not an instant splash, they're like, yeah, forget it. We're good. You can just go home and sit home for a year and a half and we won't care. But
yeah,
like,
I don't know what happened there. Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out someday, but we'll probably never will.
There's a certain level that I don't understand. And this is in AEW. This is in WWE. It's in both shows for sure. But why aren't talents like, say, for instance, Buddy Murphy? He's been brought in literally just to be a geek. That is all he's ever been in AEW. And that's why one of the reasons he left WWE is because he was a geek there. And it's like you came here to be a geek with the same guy you were wrestling around with as a geek in the other company. So like, why not make a shift? Why not make a change here and say like, this guy is fucking jacked. He looks like $1 million.
Because he's a geek. Joshua, he's
Rhea Ripley's husband.
Yeah, like yeah, because he's a geek. Do you understand? Because he's a geek. Because he's like, yeah, I take the backseat in wrestling. So I'm gonna get into this relationship with someone way more popular than I am. And it's like, oh, how does somebody mentally deal with the stress of, you know, oh, do you ever get jealous with this whole like storyline with Dominic Mysterio? And he's like, no, dude, I'm totally cool. It's like, I don't know, to have the mentality, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to like be this person. I'm not usually this person, but I'm just pointing this out to have that mentality. Because well, we've seen it all the time in wrestling. Hell, we saw it with in one of the most famous angles that was at the big boom of the golden age of WWF, the Macho Man Randy Savage and fucking Elizabeth. Right?
Yeah.
That was a real thing that developed as an on-screen thing, like the jealousy between them and Macho Man just being so incredibly wildly jealous of everybody, you know, basically thinking everybody in the industry wanted his fucking wife. Like, and that's been a thing in wrestling from that point forward. I feel like there are so many stories of relationship, you know, Matt Hardy and Lita, you know, that and Edge and that whole triangle.
John Morrison.
Yep. John Morrison, Melina, all of these things play out. Alberto Del Rio and Saraya, if we want to use a more modern thing, right? All of these things play out in front of us. And it's like, it would be easy to see how that story could play out differently. But instead, it's this guy who's like, oh yeah, no, totally cool with it. And apparently he's so super cool with it. And they're in such a good place that they're, you know, engaged and they're going to be spending the rest of their lives together. Then again, engaged isn't married, but we'll see what happens. You know what I mean?
I guess we'll see.
But that's my point is from all public perspective anyway, that's, he's like secure with that. But to me, it takes a certain mentality. And maybe that's just being a professional athlete in general that, hey, when my number gets called, I'm going to go do my thing. But when other people are going to go do their thing, they're going to be good at that. And I'm just going to sit back. You know what I mean? When my wife needs to go do her job and, you know, be a character on television, I'm mature enough to separate in my mind that it's not, and that I'm, you know, that our real life is different from this thing on TV. And then I can also go and do that and let people who are better at it than me, but maybe they're not. Maybe I am better at it than them, but people think they're better at it than me, and I'm going to help them look better. in front of all these people. I'm not saying there's not an important place for him.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying it is interesting, isn't it? The mentality that goes into, like, maybe he's just this super calm and collected guy that is just cool.
He's just cool with whatever.
With what he has achieved. And you know what? What he's achieved is great. He's a multiple. He's been on TV wrestling for the two largest companies in the history of wrestling in America.
Sure.
Well, unless, I mean, WCW. But, like, WCW wasn't worth $2 billion.
Yeah, maybe never. Well, I
don't think they ever were.
At some point.
No.
But yeah,
no, I don't think they
ever. I don't even think so either, because I don't think WWF was ever worth $2 billion in that time.
Right, exactly. So if you want to go by strict
numbers. It was like the carnival.
Yeah.
Which it still fucking is, if you think about it. It's just a billion-dollar carnival industry.
We'll get into that in just a second. But you see what I mean. Maybe.
No,
you know what?
I do.
He fills a certain role, but he's a geek. He's always going to be a geek.
He's a geek. He is a geek. I guess that's true. But I think that goes into the mentality, and it maybe does prove a little bit too, that you need to have in this industry, especially to be successful, you have to have an ego. You have to toot your own horn. You have to be
Punk.
You have to be CM Punk. You have to be Shawn Michaels. You have to be Hulk Hogan. You have to be The Warrior. You have to
be The Rock.
You have to be The Rock. You have to step in and say, that's not going to work for me, brother.
Like, that's not going to work for me, brother.
That's not going to work for me, brother. And if you don't, then these guys are going to push you around. They're going to put you in every angle ever. And maybe that's just a way to see, test the waters on who's a dick and who's able to stand up for themselves and who's just wishy-washy and do whatever. You know Triple H has stood up for himself. You know Randy Orton has. You know Batista has. You know, like, Ric Flair has, I'm certain, has stepped up and said, like, no, that's not going to work for me. You know, like, but these guys that just wind up being wishy-washy, I'll do whatever you tell me. I'm sure Nick Nemeth / Dolph Ziggler is one of those types where is one of the reasons why he never headlined a WrestleMania or never won the big match in the proper way and looked strong. I mean, I'm sure he's the kind of guy who just does whatever. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's things like that, that definitely build upon your careers and the path that you go down. I mean, even The Miz, who seems like the ultimate company guy, who would do whatever it took, whatever anything he was asked. I mean, when he was given a chance on the stick to be promo, like shooting and hot and actually like stand up for himself, he did with one of the best wrestlers in the world. He like blew him away and made him walk away from the set. Like, there, that's solidifying your spot. As much as I don't care necessarily for The Miz.
Well,
I mean,
it isn't. I mean,
he's a Hall of Famer.
To a degree, but he's also the perfect example of what you're describing of the culture that Dolph Ziggler came up in, that he came up in WWE as
True.
Well, which was a thing that Stone Cold then went on to publicly chastise everybody on the roster for in 2015, 2016 with these Stone Cold podcasts or whatever, where he's talking to all these guys that he used to work with. And he's like, hey, why aren't I talking to anybody who works here right now? Oh, yeah, it's because none of them are a fucking big enough star to talk to me. Like, somebody's got to grab the brass ring. Somebody's got to step up.
Speaking of grabbing the brass ring, we're really going off topic today, but one of the worst interviews of all time in Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast history was one Dean Ambrose.
It was.
It was a fucking miserable 90 minutes.
It's because Steve had this idea in his head of what he thinks the company's champion, how he thinks the company's champion is supposed to behave, the mentality you're supposed to have to be a pro wrestling world champion. I'm not saying Jon Moxley doesn't have that. He does.
But at
that time, I mean, creatively, the company was so and is so stifling. I mean, now it's a lot different. Right now it appears that you've got a lot of people, the Drew McIntyres, the Chelsea Greens, the Cody Rhodes, the people who, you know, clearly have a lot of creative input to their own characters and the way that they're presented on screen. But back then, that wasn't even close. I mean, what I mean? The Vince McMahon WWE is just a totally, it was a funhouse mirror world. We all put up with for years and years and years, because it was the only thing that was out there, really, that anybody could get their hands on easily. Man, it makes me so upset to think how much time we wasted.
Oh, I agree.
Like,
the 2010s in WWE, like, yeah. I mean, outside of a couple major splashes, and I always look at 2016 is the year when I got back into WWE, which lasted literally just the year.
Like a year,
It was a year. It was the Nakamuras. It was NXT. Beautiful. NXT was great for years. I mean, it had such a good run. I mean, Bo Dallas was great there. And you know, I wouldn't say Neville, but, you know, Pac was great, and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and Shinsuke Nakamura and Bobby Roode. It was like hit after hit after hit. Every 3 months they would get someone new, and it was just, this is great TV. And then it just dried up. It's like Adam Cole stayed too long and the show just, they couldn't build.
Well, Adam Cole never graduated. Nobody graduated. Nobody got called up. This past, yeah, which we can talk, maybe this is a good transition into the WWE draft. The WWE
draft was a joke, yeah.
Yeah, it was a joke, but at least they're finally actually acknowledging that NXT is supposed to be a bridge to the WWE main roster, and now these characters are moving to that main roster, because what happened was Vince McMahon went fucking, well, he was already insane, we all know, and he was already a depraved lunatic.
Piece of shit,
but,
yeah.
He went completely off the deep end and went, you know what, that developmental system that my company invested however many millions of dollars into creating our own fucking training territory to, like, get these people ready to wrestle, create an audience, create a whole audience, give that audience their own show, make this audience, this show that eventually comes to cable television, it becomes its own real, yeah, WWE show on real TV.
Yep.
And you're just going to flush that all down the toilet because you're jealous, because you're upset that, like, people like that more. They like the product that your son-in-law was in charge of more than they like yours. So, yep, you're going to stop. At first, you're going to, like, just shove the people that get called up down the card because you're upset, yep, about it. And then once that becomes something that you basically can't afford, aren't allowed to do anymore because it's too obvious.
Yeah.
You just decide to stop calling them up at all. You know, Johnny Gargano, how long did, yeah, that guy hang out down there? Oh, well, it's because Vince
forever
didn't fucking want him. Adam Cole, he hung out down there because Vince didn't want him. Tommaso Ciampa hung out down there because Vince didn't want him. Like, the list goes on. Aleister Black was only called,
yeah,
up seemingly as a formality. He's like the last guy that I can think of that, like, oh, he was the champion and then he was called up. Like, well, let's
Keith
see
Lee
what Aleister Black can do. But Keith Lee was completely,
fumbled,
by that point, it had completely squandered. They didn't even want you to remember he was NXT double champion. They wanted
I know
to think he was a Bearcat. Like,
yeah,
I mean, obviously I'm fast
Bearclaw
forwarding through some
Bearclaw
things there. But, like, you see my point. My point being, he got so anti-NXT near the last couple of years of his run there,
oh,
Vince did.
Yeah.
That
he changed it to NXT 2.0. The logo changed. Everything changed.
Oh, yeah. He tried
from
to kill the brand. He tried to kill the brand.
From what I could tell, you know, he turned it into, like, geeky WWF next generation.
It was
new
bad
generation, early 90s bullshit.
But for what
but
it's
what
worth,
tell,
those people have survived. A lot of those people have survived and are still on the show,
true,
today. So kudos to them. Go ahead.
And I think Bron Breakker would be probably the one guy that came out of the last year and a half to 2 years that's probably still on trajectory to be a star. Like, I genuinely
well,
Bron think
Breakker,
that
and then on the women's side, Tiffany Stratton and Roxanne,
sure,
Perez both. Roxanne,
yeah,
should already be on the main roster, but she's still
she's
got
a
the
Roxy
title down there.
She was
so,
Roxy, right?
Yeah.
In
Ring
of Honor. She was also,
yeah,
a Ring of Honor. She was in TNA in 2022, I think. Anyway, what I was going to say, about those stars and that rebranding and all that, I think that, oh, I think I lost my thought.
Oh,
I don't
I'm
know
sorry.
I was going to say something. No, you're good. You're good.
Yeah.
No, I just think it's really strange. And I think that hopefully they can reconfigure and figure out how to maybe save it and maybe go through another change again. NXT is in a bizarre, it's in a bizarre spot. The main roster is in a bizarre spot. If Triple H being in charge now of the WWE proper, Raw and SmackDown and whatever, if he can somehow get back to where NXT was, where if you're pushing your stars in that style. Oh, this is the question I was going to have. NXT, they kind of stopped doing those larger shows too, didn't they? Used to
no,
do, like,
they still do them. But
are,
like,
they big?
They're more,
they
like,
feel like
TV,
they feel
special,
like,
events now. Like, they're,
aren't they still at Full Sail though?
The TV ones are, yeah. But they will do, like, takeover style
show
stuff too. It's not monthly by any means. I think it's like quarterly. But then again,
yeah,
the big takeovers were
wanted
never monthly.
Yep.
I think they were always
right
quarterly. So, but they definitely do, like, one night to two night. I mean, hell, they'll call, like, these last 2 weeks of NXT TV were both considered to be these spring break-in editions,
yeah,
of the show. The big card being the week before with the actual title matches and shit. And then this past week essentially being a big week for them to reset storylines, which I actually don't mind. Like, again, there's a lot of things about this NXT product that are actually a lot of fun and are pretty cool to think about. And
that's really cool.
And I give them all the credit in the world for that. But then, as much as things change, they also stay the same.
Yeah.
And God damn it if WWE isn't the same. They're the same. It's the same show. I'm coming back to this show and I'm like, they must have just changed dramatically. Oh, for so many people to just be like, WWE's gone through a creative renaissance. I mean, they're on a whole new level right now. And I turn on the show and I'm like, What's changed? What has changed here? That Sami Zayn is still getting beat up by, you know, Chad Gable of all people. I don't know.
I get it.
It's popular to be like, Chad Gable's a good wrestler. I know he is, but I mean, we just talked about it. We talked about the Buddy Matthews and the Nick Nemeth and all these guys are good workers, but they don't do anything for me. They don't do nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing about them that makes me go, yeah, you're a star. You know what I mean? You're a wrestler.
They're in the wrong show. They're on the wrong product to be just good wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, because Bryan Danielson's a great worker. You know, Pac is a great worker, but I mean, they're appreciated a fuckload more, traveling around, doing AEW, doing New Japan, doing whatever. I mean, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., a great worker, but what would he be in WWE?
Well, he's getting pushed, but my argument is Chad Gable's run in WWE is done. I don't care about him. Get
you don't think he'll ever win a world title?
Show. No, I don't. I wouldn't want him to. I don't want to see that guy with an actual title on his. What? Are you kidding
Why not?
Me? Absolutely not. If you can he's get done. Him there, but I don't ever see that in my mind. Like, that, and you know what? Maybe somebody there does. I'm sure he does in his head. But that would be a hell of an achievement for him and for them if they could get him there realistically.
That's what WWE's challenge needs to be then. And I'm not saying just Chad Gable, but it needs to be where that anything can happen. You need to tune in every week. There needs to be championship defenses on regular TV once in a while. Not saying every week, but once in a while. It's gotten so far away from that where barely even get championship matches on pay-per-view anymore. They need to make it believable that it's anyone's game, that anyone can step up and become a champion again. When Mick Foley won the World Heavyweight Championship by beating The Rock on an episode of a taped episode of Raw, like, that was holy shit TV. That was like incredibly great,
but it devalues the title as well. I think that's the argument, right? I think I'm mostly with you. I enjoy when the title switches hands maybe a little more frequently because it does increase the level of suspense, but at the same time, WWE and AEW are both, they're booked so
every show right now.
I mean, maybe
every
obviously
show.
Like, it's,
I don't know about NXT's. I don't know about NXT's
NXT,
main title.
I don't, NXT
does that bounce around
is probably, well, no, it doesn't bounce around, but I
have no idea
to
who
me,
the champion even is.
It would seem that NXT is at least a little more like unpredictable in that nature, that like,
sure,
hey, maybe we will switch the belt, you know, to Oba Femi on a weird thing, you know, because it's the North American title and that's kind of our experiment title anyway. Like,
yeah.
But the NXT title, you know, the main event stuff, that usually, you know, the tag titles also seem to switch quite a bit, but like the main event titles don't really switch all that often. But like, it creates this air of like, yeah, just extreme predictability, which I'm not saying predictability is bad. What did we do for a really long time? What do we do now? We will still fantasy book on occasion, you know what I mean? Oh, I'd
sure.
like to see this. I want to see this. Like, that's just part of being a wrestling fan, I think. But this idea that we would need, like, this, you know what I mean? That Roman Reigns has to be a champion for 3.5-4 years.
Yeah, no,
like,
shit.
By the end of it, I'm just like,
that's been the thing. I mean, AEW has always had longer 10 years. Actually, Samoa Joe's run is probably the shortest one I can think of.
It's one of them, yeah. Yeah.
Either that or Adam Page's, I think, I would guess. But
well,
and Adam Page's felt long because nothing happened. It was like he was in mid-card as a world champion. But like, every company right now is doing long tenured championships. Like, NJPW had kind of historically always been that way anyway. They'll usually do a big title change at Wrestle Kingdom. There'll be a middle of the year champ. Right now, that's John Moxley. And then the championship will usually go back to one of the guys that were feuding in the main event feud around Wrestle Kingdom last year to go defend it at the show coming up. That's like literally a template they've been using, I think, for 5-6 years. But like, because AJ Styles was always champion at summertime. Kenny Omega was always champion around summertime. He was always going for the belt or losing the belt at Wrestle Kingdoms, but never being champion during Wrestle Kingdom season. CM Punk was always champion in summertime. He was never going into a WrestleMania defending it or winning it at the main event of WrestleMania. He was always like a mid-card guy. He was always whatever. But like TNA right now, they've done the same thing. They've had Josh Alexander break the record for longest reigning champion. And then the third longest reigning champion was Alex Shelley, who was the champion right before Moose just beat him, which Moose is now on a 100-plus day reign, which I assume is going to continue going probably for a majority of the rest of the year, unless they do some big splash, because that is actually something we could maybe micro-size touch on, is that Moose beat Nick Nemeth clean at the end of the last TNA pay-per-view. And yeah. I found that interesting. I found it interesting because the upsets were mostly guys defending their championships and successfully retaining. And at the last TNA pay-per-view, there were no title changes on the proper pay-per-view. Not a single one. And it was like, and yet I was still interested. Like, I found that interesting because I think that the suspense is that which championship is going to change. And then when none of them changed and it came main event time, and then the system was shushed to the back, you know, during the match, I'm like, okay, this is where it's going to happen. And it didn't. It's just long championship reigns are really in right now.
I think, you know, as we talk about it here, it kind of leads me to a very interesting theory. We were talking about pro sports, and obviously wrestling isn't quite pro sports, but I think a lot of elements of wrestling are becoming very pro sports-esque.
It's a gambled on event. Pro wrestling is.
Oh yeah, no, people do gamble.
Just like sports.
But what I think is more from the sense of like the way that the athletes are approaching it. Like these independent contractors, it's because they have an option or two now. Like in the U.S., you can work for AEW and probably make, if you're a main event star, you can make probably maybe even better money than WWE is willing to offer you right now.
Well, obviously.
Or
Monet / Sasha is evidence of that.
If you're a former WWE person like a Trinity Fatu / Naomi, you can find your way to Impact Wrestling and use that as your reheater for a second. Like, and slash TNA, what eventually became TNA again. Yeah. Or... Yeah,
that's considered betting on yourself.
Right, right, exactly. Or...
That's the Matt Cardona theory.
You can be... I mean, look what's happened to all these championships, right? Cody Rhodes signs a big deal with WWE, becomes world champion.
Yep.
Damian Priest, guy that has been clearly beloved by Triple H for years in both NXT and then now on the main roster, you know, got to wrestle Bad Bunny in Puerto Rico last year.
Yeah.
And now is one of their big faces as well. Like, it's clear that they've invested so much into him. Like, so there it is. Like,
he was a big comer in Ring of Honor. I never realized
he was.
I never knew that. And that's actually amazing.
Punishment Martinez.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, he has been hitting the pavement. He's put in the work. He deserves
Absolutely.
It all. But what I'm saying is the days of the Attitude Era, it's almost like the industry has shifted to the point where you can't do what they did before. You can't book a show like that anymore where we're going to switch. We have five guys that are all hot enough that we could put the world title on any one of them. And the fans will still react just as big no matter who the belt is on. Like, I can't think of a company you could do that with. No one, if you're splitting the shows down the middle like they have with Raw and SmackDown, Cody Rhodes is the only guy on his level on the SmackDown roster, period. There's nobody on that show right now that I believe could even beat him realistically or take that title off of him.
Where's Orton right now?
Orton, he could be heated up to that level if they wanted to get him back there. But I'm saying all of that stuff takes time, right? And it takes the ability to have matches, to put people over, to tell stories in a way that wrestling is supposed to be told. But because we live in an era where it's not It's not really, I mean, it is wrestling, but like AEW is becoming more and more WWE all the time in the sense that
very true.
The segments are produced for a very specific, like it's just filling time on this TV show. And then they'll have this match that means something at the pay-per-view, but maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe it's just a beat to get to your next part of the, it's part of the story. And you know what? It's only a mistake if the story ends. You know, it's only a mistake if that's the end. That's the mentality that these people approach this shit with. Like, they've told us flat out that they're...
All of it is to say
that these people, it extends from the issue of people not wanting to do jobs. Like, Malakai Black doesn't want to lose a match, so he can't wrestle He can't wrestle a singles match with anybody. He literally isn't wrestling anybody. Why? Because he doesn't want to lose matches.
He doesn't want to lose matches. Yeah.
What?
Like, it's an interesting bottleneck that TNA is also. I know I keep bringing up TNA, and I know we're not talking about TNA, but TNA is also.
Because I'm opening up the whole industry. Yeah.
They put themselves in an interesting position with the X Division Championship right now because Mustafa Ali also does not want to lose any matches for a long time. And he's actually doing a pretty good job promoting the X Division while he's carrying it to all these different promotions, working all these different shows. And it's a thing. But like he has said, he does not want to lose matches for quite a while. And so that is defeating that suspension of disbelief in the world of wrestling, where when you're going to see him wrestling on Impact, TNA pay-per-views, whatever, between now Slammiversary, Bound for Glory, I don't expect him to lose now because of this little caveat. This is a similar interest to like when Pac was, what was he, Dragon Gate? He was undefeated in Dragon Gate, so he didn't want to lose matches either. It was really bizarre, but like this is the one thing I will comment on about championship reigns and the length of them and whatnot. And you know, this goes into ego. This goes into being a geek, being a yes man, just saying, doing whatever you want to do or doing whatever you're told to do, things like that. TNA, AEW, and JPW each have one main world championship. One. And so, yes, those title reigns in this day and age, it makes sense for them to only shift probably at the most once every 6 months, maybe once a quarter, but really once every 6 months should be about what you're doing. It'd be my guess. I think TNA wants Moose to be this heel champion for quite a while. I think they want him to be kind of unstoppable for a while. So I don't think he's going to lose the belt. At the very earliest would be Bound for Glory, be my opinion. I think they're going to continue the storyline where they build up someone to be the big bad. And unfortunately, I don't necessarily agree with this idea, but if it brings back Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy for one more chance to be the Unbroken or the Broken Hardy Boys in TNA for one more thing, either it's at the Hardy compound, whatever, I'm all for it because I did love. That was what brought me back into TNA when AJ left, when like everybody was Hogan left and everybody like I was like, this is the least I'm interested in TNA in ages. And then when the Broken Hardys came back, I was like, this is interesting. It's very fun. It's very entertaining. But like, if that happens, then there's going to be a Moose Hardy match, and my guess is Moose will retain, and then the lights are going to go out again, and then someone new is going to return, and you know it's going to be this big thing, and who knows what it's going to be. But like WWE has two heavyweight championship world champions, like two guys. There's a universal champion.
Well, they have one real belt, and then they have another belt where it's like, hey, good job.
Hold on. There's.
I'm just saying that's what they have.
Historically, since the brand split, Raw has a champion and SmackDown has a champion.
And one of them is taken seriously and one of them is not, but could continue.
If this draft is to have any matter in a hill of beans, they need to keep one champion on one show and one champion on the other and leave it that way, at least until WrestleMania next year, because they did this brand split, this whole idea again in the last 5 years or whatever it was. And every single time they do a brand split, it slowly starts to mishmash over when they've got guys appearing on both shows and then all of a sudden champions are on both shows. And then people just kind of forget there's even a fucking brand split. There's like a couple mid-carders here and there that never appear on the other show, but that's about it. Main eventers are wherever they want to be. And they're talking about Cody and Roman all over the place. They're talking about The Rock, Rock's on Raw, Rock's on SmackDown, Rock's on Raw again. Like it's just a mishmash of bullshit. And that's what kind of happens. But now if they really want this genuine brand split to happen, they have a luxury with having two championship belts. They can do a championship shift once a quarter because one of those champions can remain champ for 6 months plus, and the other one can as well, but there's two of them. So let's start to move things like a SummerSlam, big championship can change hands. Survivor Series, another one. Royal Rumble, another one. WrestleMania, another one. Like, have the big shows be championships where there's a possibility one or the other could shift, or do something different with a women's champion where they say they'll put the women's championship as a main event of one of those shows, which I do feel is coming. I think Bianca Belair, I think when Charlotte comes back, I think you're going to have Jade Cargill in the main event. I think there's a lot of different things they could do.
Well, Bianca and Jade are challenging for the tag belts, so I actually think that's probably going to be a thing for a while. I would say would
yes,
be their
that puts them in that position. And when Charlotte heals up and whatever, they can figure something out with that. Because I do think that they need to, in some respects, rebuild the women's division in WWE. Bianca Belair is the only real shining main event star that looks big and amazing right now, because Becky Lynch is in a weird downward spiral. Charlotte's always hurt. Bayley is really great. Bayley's done really good stuff with her new run. But like outside of that, it's kind of like, who's... You know, this is a far cry from the Four Horsewomen of 7-8 years ago.
Not necessarily. You look at the rest of the, you've still got Asuka and Kairi. You could split them up right away, and literally either one of them could be singles right away. You know,
you call Buddy Murphy a geek, but Asuka's running the last 4 years, not a geek. She's a geek.
I'm sorry.
She's a geek.
No, she's not. Joshua, your definition of geek and my definition of geek are very, very different. Asuka has won every accolade that a WWE woman can win. That's not a geek.
In her time. But right now, she's in a stable, and she's being a geek, just like Buddy Murphy.
She's the female equivalent
of Buddy Murphy.
She's an active champion at the moment. She is one half of the women's tag team championship. Well, she's about to drop them to two people that are about to be pushed bigger. But all I'm saying is, if you needed to do matches, if you need people to mix in there, Asuka and Kairi could both be singles people tomorrow, and it would be believable, and it would be fine.
By your definition, you just said, if you need matches, you need people to fit in that are going to put together good matches. Give me Chad Gable. Give me Buddy Murphy. You just
Asuka and Kairi have more personality in their freaking pinky fingers than
those two guys have in their entire
bodies.
I don't know about that. I think Chad Gable's a very entertaining character. I think he's a good character. I think he's interesting because he can go from being silly and stupid and ridiculous to being very serious very quick. And I don't think he is someone to consider as a geek, and he's hit his ceiling on where he's going to be in his career. I don't think anything like that. I think he's untapped potential, and he's one of those types that I think if they don't treat him correctly or they don't push him at some point, not saying he needs to be a main eventer, but at some point he's the one of those that are going to walk away and then have Bryan Danielson type career somewhere else. So I don't know. I think he's awesome, and he does have a little bit of a short stature, so that's an issue, but it never hurt Rey Mysterio. So I don't know. Is Chad Gable Rey Mysterio Jr.? Of course not. But I'm just saying, there's potential there. There's potential for everyone. Don't judge a book by its cover. Speaking of geeks, though, you want to call Chad Gable a geek, or I love Asuka, by the way. And this is just me trying to prove a point.
But that's not a point. Because you're using somebody. I mean, if you want to call Kairi Sane a geek, sure. On WWE main roster TV, Kairi is a bit of a geek. She's been the person to do a lot of jobs. She hasn't won nearly as many things. She won a Mae Young Classic, I think. And she won the NXT Women's title at least once. But like
the build...
Tag team champion only. You see what I mean?
I guess I see what you're saying. No, Kairi is amazing.
She is amazing. I'm not saying she isn't. They're both great.
The build for Bayley to become a face and like this control alt delete or whatever the fuck their faction's called, and this whole big long drawn out thing for Bayley to finally say, like, you guys are talking about me behind my back, was cringe TV to the max. I'm sorry, but that whole faction is geeks. Like, until they split them up and do something with them. And if they're just thinking this is good, we're going to keep them. We're going to keep them be just random nerds. And they're going to be the new 3-man band or whatever. Then fine, whatever. You can do whatever you want with them. But like, speaking of geeks, and I'm talking the biggest geek and the worst looking bumps I've ever seen in the history of professional wrestling. How about Tony Khan coming out there and getting sucker punched with a microphone in his belly by Jack Perry?
We've kind of been pushing this conversation off, and it's good that you brought this up because we're coming up on round in the corner for an hour here. But
This is the thing. AEW, in my opinion, Dynasty may be the best pay-per-view of the year. I loved that show. It was sort of low key. It was like the matches were definitely produced in a good way. They were promoted in a positive way, but AEW had been in such a weird lull that it just wasn't super interesting to me. I didn't watch it live. I watched it the next morning and I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed WrestleMania. I've enjoyed TNA shows this year. I did enjoy Wrestle Kingdom.
I've
like
enjoyed wrestling from every wrestling major company.
Wrestling has been great.
It's been well spotty. There's been peaks and valleys. There's been peaks and valleys, but definitely peaks.
But Dynasty stands out, and it really does. It did stand out as an incredibly good show. The thing with AEW is, like you said, peaks and valleys and all this stuff. AEW followed up an amazing pay-per-view with Dynasty with probably the lamest episode of Dynamite that I'd seen in ages. And yes, the Tony Khan thing was shocking, and it definitely got people interested. And the CM Punk behind the stage scene things hilariously flopped, and only like 600,000 people tuned into it. And yes, NBA playoffs are going on.
I would still say the jury's out on that, because you look at the angle's still ongoing. That was the beginning point of the angle we are seeing play out on TV now. That cannot be denied.
Dynamite was a joke. This week's
saying that video they played, because you're picking on them for the video again. And what I'm saying is that's what you're saying now. But technically, I said it at the time, and it's being continued today. That was the beginning of this elite angle. That was the beginning of Jack Perry coming back.
The beginning. Because Okada had already been introduced as their new member. They'd already done the suit-wearing bullshit where they come to there and they're telling, we're Nicholas and we're Matthew now.
Well, it was the...
blah, blah, blah.
step of it, undeniably, though. It is the beginning of this step of it. It introduced Jack Perry into the story.
Yes, it brought Jack Perry back. That's the only thing it did. It was not the step in the right direction.
But that's a massive thing.
They had already fired Kenny Omega. What happened is this angle wasn't catching fire. No one was watching. No one was watching the YouTube videos. They were the lowest on their YouTube channel as well. People were tuning out, they needed some sort of a big splash to make people draw attention to this angle. And yes, while it did draw attention to the angle, when they initially promoted saying, we're going to show the backstage scene or the backstage footage from All In, and it's got like the CM Punk, Jack Perry thing, most people tuning into that, or at least people watching the YouTube videos of it, didn't even realize there was an angle going on outside of that, because they wanted to see the CM Punk footage. It drew in different viewers. It drew in people from all over to finally put eyes on an angle that they'd been working on for a while that now all of a sudden has some traction because of that thing. So like, yes, it was silly to do, in my opinion, but it did draw some eyes to it. And now the angle's gotten to a point where, in my opinion, one of the best things that I've seen that's a non-wrestling match in AEW in the last 12 months happened with Kenny Omega coming back just Wednesday night. I love that. I love Kenny Omega. I think his promo was great. I felt compelled. I felt sorry for him. I felt wanting to root for him. And then horrific incidents happen, and he's getting chair shots in the gut and taking moves, and you just can't help but feel for the guy. But like, that's the AEW. That's what's going on right now. Like, I don't know if they're going to follow that up with Collision. What's going to happen on Collision? What's going to happen, next week on Dynamite? It's weird, this lulls and this hills and the peaks and the valleys, because Dynasty was such a great pay-per-view. Dynamite was bad. Dynamite's great. Collision's bad. Collision's great. So it's like, I don't know what to say about AEW. It is in a weird spot. But like, Tony Khan, he went to the NFL draft wearing a neck brace.
He's living the gimmick, brother.
He's living the gimmick, which I guess is pretty cool. I think it's a little silly. He did call the WWE the Harvey Weinstein of the wrestling industry.
Well, I mean, that's reality.
That's the Vince McMahon part of it, yeah.
That's the entirety of it. This is the point that I've been trying to make for years, this entire time. What do you mean?
We know that.
No, I'm saying we all know it. You know it, but nobody wants to acknowledge it, but it's true. WWE is rotten to its core. Vince McMahon was the WWE for 40-plus years. Give me just a second here. Hang on just a second.
How do we know? Okay, no problem. How do we know, though, and you can edit this out or you can yell at me later, but how do we know, though, that this new version of the WWE... So sorry, you were stepped away for a second. What I was asking was how do we know that this new version of WWE hasn't flushed out the evil, flushed out the backwash, the bullshit, like removing
Brock
Lesnar completely?
There isn't. It isn't. The entire tree. If you make a house out of human feces and then you like put plaster on the outside of the feces, the inside of the house is still feces, right? So it's still going to smell like shit. Whether it looks like shit or not is a different question.
But Zach.
I've watched this product, Joshua, and I've come to the conclusion that nothing's different. WWE is not any different than it was.
Vince
McMahon set up that company the way that it is right now, and Vince McMahon's fingerprints are still all over it. They're inexorable from it. You cannot. It doesn't matter if he sold all of his shares.
Mr.
The company was built entirely on his vision, to his standard, every step of the way. You can't deny it. You cannot deny it because you know it's true.
But Vince sold all of his shares. I think
he
we're
did
good.
Sell all of his shares. No, we're not good. We're not good is my point. I mean, we're going to have to be good because that's the world that we live in. But I don't know, man.
What? Okay,
that's
so
a
what
whole
happens,
nother conversation.
What's going to happen in the world? What is it? This January 1st in 2025, Monday Night Raw moves to Netflix. Right? Is that the theory here? Is that what's happening?
What's happening? Yeah.
What's USA going to do on Monday nights?
USA is going to start carrying SmackDown on Friday nights.
I understand that,
yeah,
but what about Monday night?
I don't know. They do something else with their Monday nights, Barmageddon or whatever the hell it's called.
Who's to say AEW doesn't start? They fucking cancel Collision, they fucking cancel Rampage, and put on Monday Night Wrestling on USA Network.
Who's to say it
won't happen?
I mean, that's not.
Why wouldn't it?
Because Universal is in WWE's pocket. They have been the whole time. They've been step in step since Saturday night's main event back in the fucking 80s.
I guess NBC Universal, yeah, that's true.
But then again, Vince isn't there anymore, so maybe that doesn't matter. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
What I'm trying to say is there are things about this company that have improved. But this idea that the industry has gone back. Oh, yeah, we can just go back to liking WWE again. No more AEW, no more NJPW, no more TNA. Fucking,
oh, yeah.
We're just going to watch Cody obviously. Rhodes and his... My dad is dead on WWE. Congratulations. Like, I don't know. That's it. That's all his character's been this whole time. He used AEW clearly as a platform just to get back to WWE when they made it clear that they were like, we kind of resent the fact that you are trying to use as a platform just for yourself, and your wife is also like weirdly super involved with this company. We don't really want her around anymore. Well, then I guess we're quitting. No, but that's the reality of the situation. Again, nothing that I'm saying is untrue. This is all reality. These are all facts. These are all things that led one thing led to another.
I don't know about facts. They're facts.
They come out. They've come out and said it. They've come out and confirmed it. Cody Rhodes is fucking shooting his mouth off again this past week. We're getting way down the rabbit hole. I'm sorry.
Sure.
We're running out of time.
I think there's still a possibility that Cody really did want to create AEW to be the alternative to WWE, and he really did want to just have that be his thing and be an executive vice president. I think run that company forever. I really do think he wanted that to happen, because I do think that him involving Brandy is no different than the Young Bucks bringing in like a Brandon Cutler or a Kenny Omega bringing in all of his geeky friends too. Like, come on. Like that there's people that are on TV because of those guys, because they're buddies. I mean, the fuck is that?
Sure, but
that's going to happen anywhere.
That's fine. Like, that happens in wrestling. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. What I take issue with is when Tony, the guy with the money, pushes back a bit and says, you know what, Cody, we love you, but maybe we don't like Brandy as much. Maybe she hasn't resonated as much with some of the talent. Maybe her ideas are falling flat with our fan base. Maybe we need to move on from Brandy. We love you, though. You're a centerpiece of our in-ring product on screen, and you've been a huge building block to this thing. It's like, I understand it's tough. They are legitimately husband and wife. They are partners in life. So you want that for your partner, and you want to see them succeed. You don't want to be like implicitly approving their downfall. So but it's like, well, then I guess maybe you guys needed to keep Randy around and fucking suck it up. I don't know. All I'm saying is that's the domino that made this whole thing happen. That right there is the domino that leads to where we're sitting right now, which is somehow WWE is being perceived as this massively altered product that I've just watched.
Yeah,
I've intently watched, and it really isn't. It isn't. What they're doing in very subtle ways, they're just allowing their talent that little bit more room to breathe. Drew McIntyre, go out there and be a little bit more, yourself, right? Be the Drew McIntyre that has the sharp tongue. You know, like, you're a big guy, but you can also talk. Show people that. We want people to see that. They're just getting better at highlighting the things that they should have been good at highlighting years ago. Right. That's all that's happened. The core of their product is still the same, which is not the professional wrestling that I prefer.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because they have perceived, this is, sorry, rabbit hole. We're just about wrapped up here.
We basically, I don't know what happened to our point. I don't know what happened to our point.
Producers are telling us to wrap. They've been telling us to wrap it up for 20 minutes now. No, but I would say this, if WWE has gotten me interested in one thing, it is Drew McIntyre and how he comes across as such a crybaby and such a wimp in his promos and stuff. But all I can think of is like, no, you're right. Like, CM Punk is a piece of shit, and he is in it for himself, and you're right about everything. And it's, I don't know, it's this great like tweener thing where there are probably plenty of people that think he's right too. But anybody that's ever had an issue with CM Punk, if they relate to Drew McIntyre, they look like geeks as well, because Drew McIntyre has been made to look like a geek during this angle, and it sucks. But
well, next time we get together for 164, we'll really have to actually talk about this thing that we had intended to talk about in this episode, but we've run out of time, which was the history and our feelings on authority figures in reality, like real life ownership of wrestling, getting involved in on-screen things. Because we did talk about like the overall reaction or the overall direction of that story.
That's true, yeah.
But I would like to have a larger discussion about like, okay, well, is it justified based purely off of things that have happened in the past? And we can get on that. But Joshua, where can the people find you in the meantime?
Yeah, no, I agree. We will definitely go over that next, especially how Tony Khan had come on to AEW to say he does not want to be an on-air character or personality because he thinks that is taking away from the talent, and now is a geek on TV, just like Dixie Carter was when she was getting powerbombed through tables at the end of TNA's first run. Anywho, desperation much? You can find me on the interwebs.
We can get into that at another day.
We'll get into that next time. You can find me on the interwebs. I'm, of course, talking about video games, music, comic books, wrestling, whatever you want to talk about. We'll talk about it. You can find me at _ Joshua Turbo. Don't forget the underscore, as it is the most important underscore in all of the interwebs. And I am on Threads. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Blue Sky. You can find me on all those. So, and of course, if you're looking for pro wrestling off topic, just go ahead and find us. Go look us up on your Google us. You can Google us. You can look us up on Spotify. We're a Pro Wrestling Off Topic, a podcast. We have, as of this point, 162 episodes. This is our 163rd. You can find us online. Otherwise, podomatic.com/Pro Wrestling Off Topic or facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Off Topic. Zachary Hagenbusher, where can they find you?
They can find me in underneath their bed in their worst nightmares. I don't know. You can find me complaining about Vince McMahon week after week.
God. I want to see you playing Nintendo Golf again. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm real start and stop with the whole streaming thing. I feel like I have an idea. And then I do it a couple times and I think, no, this is stupid. And I stop.
And it's not stupid.
So it's not stupid. I should keep doing it. Yes. If you want to follow me, if you care at all and you want to get a notification if I would go live at all, you can follow me on Twitch at Beer Dad. And that's spelled, this is great for an audio medium, B33R. _dad. Did it because I didn't want to get censored or whatever.
B33R_dad. Yeah. Look him up on Twitch or Surge World Order on Twitter.
Yeah, or Surge World Order on X. I'm pretty sure there's a dead account that I'm not logged into that's still out there somewhere. It's probably been taken over by a bot at this point.
Probably. Yeah. They're selling oils and massage oils right now.
That's right. They're scamming people. And oh, look at these Ray-Ban sunglasses. 2 for $5.
Speaking of scamming people, tune in next time to Pro Wrestling Off Topic for episode 164.
Signing off. We'll see you later.
See you guys.